eat this, Noriko.
I know, but just eat it. Even a little will help, Shogo insisted.
Noriko hesitantly took the bread and nibbled. She made an effort to swallow it. Then she returned the rest of the bread to Shogo.
No more, huh?
Noriko barely shook her head.
Even shaking her head seemed to exhaust her. Shogo wanted her to eat more, but he set the bread aside and once again pulled out the small pouch of medicine from his pocket.
It's cold medicine, he said, and gave her a capsule that was different from the pain reliever he'd given her before.
Noriko nodded.
With Shogo's help, she managed to swallow it down with water from the bottle. Water came streaming from her mouth, but Shogo gently wiped it away.
Okay, now lie down.
Noriko nodded obediently and lay down on the grass, still wrapped up in the two coats.
What's going on, Shogo? Is she going to be all right? Shuya asked.
Shogo shook his head.
I don't know for sure yet. It may just be a fever, but the wound might be infected.
What?
With Noriko lying down, Shuya looked down at the bandana bandage wrapped around her right calf.
But I thought we cleaned out her wound.
Shogo shook his head again.
She moved around the woods a lot after she was shot, right? It might have been infected before we treated her.
Shuya stared at Shogo for a while and then knelt down beside Noriko. He reached his hand out to Noriko's forehead.
Noriko.
Noriko opened her eyes. She smiled feebly.
I'm all right. I'm just a little tired.
Don't worry.
But her breathing hardly indicated she was all right.
Shuya looked over at Shogo again.
He restrained himself from sounding overly agitated and said,
Shogo, we can't stay here. We have to move. We should at least find a house where she can get warm.
Shogo cut him off. Just hold on. Let's just wait and see for now.
He tightly wrapped the makeshift blanket coats around Noriko's body.
But it's too dangerous for us to move, I told you.
Noriko faintly opened her eyes. She looked over at Shuya and said,
I'm so sorry, Shuya.
Then she said to Shogo,
I'm sorry,
and closed her eyes.
Shuya's lips tightened as he looked down at Noriko's pale face.
25 students remaining.
Chapter 37. Takako Chigusa, female student number 13, stuck her head out from under the shadow of a tree trunk. She was halfway up the eastern side of the island's southern mountain. According to the map, she was somewhere near the border between H4 and H5. There was a grove full of trees that grew shorter as she headed up the mountain.
Takako gripped her weapon, an ice pick, and looked back.
The house she'd been hiding inside was obscured by trees and no longer visible. It was decrepit and overrun by tall grass and seemed like it'd been abandoned even before the island had been evacuated. She remembered something like a chicken shack was connected to the main building. Now she couldn't even see the rusty tin roof. How far had she come? 200 meters? 100 meters?
Takako was the best short-distance sprinter on the girls' track team. She held the prefect's all-time second-place junior high record for the 200-meter, so she had a good head for distances. But she wasn't sure now, mainly because of the hills and bushes, not to mention the tension she was feeling. After eating awful bread and water for breakfast, Takako decided to wait until 1 p.m. to leave the house. She'd been hearing what sounded like gunshots ever since the game started, so she had stayed hidden in a corner of the abandoned house. But now she thought staying cooped up wouldn't do any good. She had to join up with someone, a friend she could trust, and proceed. Of course, it was possible friends she trusted wouldn't trust her. But Takako was a beautiful girl. Her upward curving eyes were a little fierce-looking, but they matched her sharp chin, well-formed mouth, and nicely defined nose, all of which gave her an aristocratic look. Her long hair was dyed with orange streaks, which might look odd at first, but with her jewelry, which included earrings, two in her left ear, one in her right, designer rings on the middle and ring fingers of her left hand, a total of 5 bracelets on her wrists,
and a pendant made from a foreign coin, she managed to assert her own look that made her all the more attractive. Her teachers didn't really approve of her hair and gaudy jewelry, but she got good grades and was the track team's star sprinter, so they never directly criticized her. Basically, Takako was very proud. She wasn't going to be bound by the silly school rules the other girls followed. Whether it was, unfortunately enough, because of her beauty or her pride, or whether it was because she was simply shy, Takako didn't have many close friends in her class. Her best friend was Kahoru Kitazawa, whom she'd known ever since elementary school, but she was in another class. But there was someone in her class whom Takako could trust. The student wasn't a girl, though. She'd known him since they were kids. And with him in mind, she couldn't help being preoccupied by something. When she left the school building, Takako thought someone who'd left before she did might come back. In that case, she'd have to leave with extreme caution. And it was best to leave the school by foiling the assailant's expectations. When she came into the hall, she peeked outside through the exit door. There were woods in front of her and a hill on the left. The area to her right was relatively open. The assailant, if there were one, would have to be hiding in the woods or on the hill. Takako crouched down as she left the building and dashed to her right, staying close to the school building wall. The track star let her mighty legs cut loose. She didn't even have to think about it. She ran down the street through a cluster of houses and into a narrow alley. Then she ran toward the base of the southern mountain. All her energy was focused on getting away from the school and finding somewhere to hide. But what if there had been someone in the woods or on the hill in front of the school? Someone who had no intention of attacking her? In other words, what if he who'd left before her had hidden in the woods or on the mountain and had been waiting for her? Maybe she'd lost her chance by running out of there at full speed. No, she didn't think so. What else could she have done? Anyone hanging around the school was jeopardizing his or her life. They had known each other since they were kids. It was nothing more than that. They had remained decent friends through all these years. She thought it presumptuous of her to hope that he, Hiroki Sugimura, male student number 11, would risk his life waiting for her. The important thing was finding someone now. Finding Hiroki Sugimura would be ideal, but she knew that was too optimistic. She'd settle for the school representative, Yuki Utsumi, or some average girl. As long as she was careful not to get shot on sight, she could calm them down. If they were calm already, that would even be better, although the thought of someone remaining calm under these circumstances was a bit scary too. To find that someone, that was all she could do for now. The one thing she knew not to do was to raise her voice. She had proof of that now. From the abandoned house, Takako had also seen Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano die on top of the northern mountain. So Takako decided to leave the abandoned shack where she was hiding and climb up to the peak of the southern mountain. Once she was there, she'd descend the slope by circling the mountain and check for anyone who might be hiding in the bushes. She could throw pebbles at the bushes just as she'd been doing ever since she left the shack. If she encountered someone and figured out who it was, then she could decide whether or not to approach that person. Earlier, Sakamochi had announced that the area around the peak of the southern mountain would become a forbidden zone at 3 p.m. But as long as she didn't run into any problems, she'd be able to completely survey the area before then. Also, if there were anyone in the area at the moment, he or she would have to be out of there by 3 p.m. She'd have a better chance locating someone on the move. Takako checked her supplied wristwatch. It was 1:20 p.m. She usually wore bracelets instead of her watch, but she couldn't afford that luxury now. Then she touched her collar. If you try to pry it loose, it will explode. It was suffocating. Not only the way it dug into her neck, but its mere presence. The chain of her pendant lightly tapped against the band. Takako decided to ignore it and gripped her ice pick. What good was this weapon, though, with her left hand? With her right, she grabbed some pebbles and tossed them out in front of her to her left and right. The bushes made a rustling sound as the pebbles sailed through them. She waited for a while. No response. She moved forward. She took a deep breath, ready to run across the open ground between the bushes. Suddenly, she heard a new rustling sound. Someone's head popped out of the bushes, approximately 10 meters to her left. She could see the back of his coat and the back of his head. His hair was slightly disheveled, but still smooth. His head turned left and right, checking the area. Takako froze. She was in trouble. It was a guy. Guys were trouble. She had no particular reason to think so, but she had a hunch anyone besides Hiroki Sugimura was trouble, and she could immediately tell this guy was not Hiroki. Takako held her breath and slowly stepped back into the thicket behind her. She knew this would happen, but that didn't stop her from trembling. Suddenly, the boy turned around. Their eyes met. The face, which had an expression of utter astonishment, belonged to Kazushi Niida, male student number 16. Oh man, why did I have to bump into this jerk? What mattered now was that she was totally exposed and how dangerous that was. She turned around and started running back the way she had come. Wait! She heard Kazushi's voice. The sound of him waded through the thicket, coming after her. Wait! Now he was shouting, wait! Ugh, what an idiot. Takako hesitated for a few moments and then stopped. She looked back. If Kazushi had a gun and wanted to shoot her, he'd have done that by now. More troubling was his shouting. It endangered not only his life, but hers. Just as it was moments ago, there didn't seem to be anyone in the area. Slowing down, Kazushi descended the slope. Takako realized Kazushi held a crossbow loaded with a bolt in his right hand. It wasn't pointed at Takako right now, but if it were, could she dodge it and run away? Should she have stopped? No, Takako reassured herself. She'd done the right thing. Kazushi Niida was a forward on the soccer team. Top athletes like him were as fast, if not faster, than track runners. Even though Takako was a star track runner, he'd have eventually caught up with her. Either way, it was too late. Kazushi stopped several meters away from her. He had wide shoulders and was relatively tall and well-built. His smooth hair was long, which was the current fashion with soccer players, but now it was disheveled, as if he'd been playing in a close match that had gone into overtime. A smile emerged on his face, which was pretty good-looking except for his bad teeth. What does he want? Takako thought as she scrutinized his face. He might not have any harmful intentions. He might actually be thinking he finally found someone he could trust. But Takako didn't have a very good impression of Kazushi Niida. To put it bluntly, she couldn't stand his kind of chumminess. She also couldn't stand his arrogance. They'd been classmates ever since their first year in junior high. Hiroki became her classmate in their second year. Without putting much effort into them, Kazushi was above average in grades and sports, but in spite of that, or maybe it had nothing to do with that, his immaturity really stuck out. He tried to impress others, and when he screwed up, he'd come up with some lame-ass excuse. Furthermore, and this was really stupid, but when they were first-year students, there were rumors that she and Kazushi were going out. Junior high kids don't have anything better to do. Well, let them say what they want. Every time the rumors got going again, he'd go to her desk and touch her on the shoulder. How dare he? And tell her, there's a rumor floating around about us. Takako would turn away and brush his hand off with the reply, oh, I'm so honored. She let it slide, scoffing at him on the inside. Go away, you little brat. You've got some nerve. But now she wasn't in the position to turn her back to him. Takako spoke cautiously. She had to get away from him as quickly as possible. That was what it came down to. Don't shout, you idiot. I'm sorry, Kazushi answered, but you were the one who took off. Takako didn't mess around with her response. Get to the point, cut to the chase. Her best features. The fact is, I don't want to be with you. She looked at Kazushi and managed to shrug her tense shoulders. Kazushi grimaced. Why? Because you act like you're such a goody-goody, she thought. Look, we both know why. Okay, later, Takako said as she got ready to run. Still, she felt herself hesitating as her feet trembled. She stopped. Because out of the corner of her eye, she saw the weapon in Kazushi's right hand pointed at her. Takako slowly turned around, keeping a close eye on his fingers on the trigger of his bowgun.
"What's this?" she asked.
She casually slid the day pack off her left shoulder and caught its strap.
Would it be able to shield her from the force of the crossbow?
"I don't want to resort to this," Kazushi said.
This was exactly what she couldn't stand about him. He was making excuses, but in fact he was trying to gain the upper hand.
"So you better stay with me."
That pissed her off.
But that was also when she noticed something. When she was hiding in the shack, her uniform skirt got caught on a broken door. The tear resembled the slit up a Chinese dress, and now Kazushi was staring at it. His eyes were strangely glazed over. It gave her the creeps.
Takako quickly moved her legs to cover them as much as possible.
Then she said, "Give me a break. You expect me to join you with that stuck in my face?"
"So you promise not to run away?" Kazushi spoke in his usual arrogant voice.
He didn't lower the crossbow.
Takako had to put up with him.
"Just put that down, so you won't run.
Are you deaf?" Takako said sharply, and Kazushi reluctantly lowered his weapon. Then he assumed a smug tone as he said, "I've always thought you were fine."
Takako raised her well-defined, elegantly arched eyebrows. "After threatening my life like this, he has the nerve to say I'm fine?"
Kazushi's eyes fell on her legs again. He made no effort to be subtle, and his eyes were locked on them now.
Takako lifted her chin slightly.
"So?"
"So I won't kill you.
Just stay with me."
Takako shrugged again. Any hesitation she might have had was now wiped out by anger.
"I told you I don't want to," she spat out.
"Later."
Takako turned to,
"No."
This time she began moving backwards and staring back at Kazushi. Kazushi lifted his crossbow again. His face had the expression of a kid begging for a toy at a department store.
"Mom, I want it! I want it!"
Takako quietly said, "Stop this."
"Then stay with me," Kazushi repeated. The way he tilted his head revealed how frantically he was trying to calm his nerves.
Takako repeated, "I told you, no."
Kazushi didn't lower his weapon.
They glared at each other.
Takako couldn't bear it anymore.
"You know, what do you want?
Say it.
You're not killing me off.
I tell you I don't want to be with you, but you insist.
I don't get it."
"I..." Kazushi stared at Takako with that leer in his eyes and said,
"I'm saying I'll protect you, so just stay with me. We're safer together, right?"
"You've got to be joking.
You have the nerve to threaten me like that and say you'll protect me?
I can't trust you. Get it? Can I go now? I'm going."
Kazushi replied, "If you move, I'll shoot you."
He aimed the crossbow directly at her chest.
By openly threatening her like this, Kazushi lost any chance he had of keeping to a civilized code of conduct. Not that he had much of a sense of civility to begin with.
He stood still and said, "You better obey me, girl. A woman obeys her man."
Takako was furious. Then he had the nerve to say, "You're a virgin, aren't you?" in a casual tone, as if he were only confirming her blood type, B.
Takako was at a loss for words.
"What did this asshole say?"
"Am I wrong?" he asked. "Hiroki wouldn't have the guts to sleep with a girl."
Kazushi said this because he, along with many of her other classmates, had the mistaken impression that Takako was going out with Hiroki Sugimura. She had two reasons to be especially annoyed, though. First of all, her relationship with Hiroki was none of their business. Second, Kazushi's making fun of Hiroki pissed her off.
Takako broke into a grin. She'd realized a long time ago that she could always grin when she was absolutely furious. So she grinned like this at Kazushi and said, "What's it got to do with you?"
Kazushi might have misinterpreted Takako's grin.
Kazushi grinned back.
"So I'm right."
Still smiling, Takako glared back at him.
"Yes, in fact, you are right. I might look a little flashy, but just as you said, I'm a virgin, an innocent 15-year-old girl. However..."
"It's none of your business, asshole."
"We're gonna die anyway. Don't you want to try it once before you die?"
I'd be a good partner. Although Takako had never felt so angry in her life, she couldn't help but gawk at him in amazement. Her mouth might have even hung open. His outrageous behavior was bad enough, but now it was so out of control it was like he was from another world. Captain Columbus, that is San Salvador Island.
Okay, they're savages. Beware of the savages.
Takako looked down and burst out laughing. It was incredibly funny. This sitcom would have been a hit. She lifted her face. She must have been glaring at Kazushi, but she'd still give him one last chance. This is my last offer. I don't want to be with you. Just put that down and leave me alone. Otherwise, I'll take it that you're going to kill me. All right? Kazushi didn't lower his crossbow. Instead, he raised it up to his shoulders and threatened her. This is my last warning. You better obey me, Takako. The fact that Takako felt a thrill at this exchange, which was in some ways the turning point of their encounter, may have been indicative of her personality. And from here on in, she couldn't be held responsible for what would happen. Takako took a step forward to put an end to this conversation with this asshole. I see. So you just want to rape me, right? You think dying gives you the right to do anything? Kazushi glared back at her. That's not what I said. What's the difference? She laughed at him inside. Let me guess what you'll say next. I don't want to rape you, but you better take off your clothes. Takako grinned as she calmly tilted her head. She said, right now? You might want to worry more about your life than about your lame-ass dick. Kazushi's face suddenly flushed. His mouth twisted as he spouted off. Shut up. You really want to get raped? Takako grinned and answered. So the truth comes out. I told you to shut up, Kazushi repeated. I can kill you if I want, you know. He made her sick. She remembered how he tried to coax her into it just moments ago, saying, I won't kill you. Kazushi paused and then boasted, I already killed Yoshio. Takako was a little shocked, but she merely lifted her brow and remarked, Huh? Even if it were true, given how he'd been hiding, he'd probably been terrified, then somehow bumped into Yoshio Akamatsu and ended up killing him by accident. After that, too scared of coming across anyone stronger, he'd probably spent the rest of the time hiding. But knowing him, she knew that if he ended up surviving by hiding until he had one weaker final opponent, he'd say something like, I have no choice, and kill him or her without hesitation. I was thinking, Kazushi went on, confirming Takako's suspicion. I decided this is a game, so I'm not going to pull any punches. Takako stared at Kazushi, still wearing that grin. Aha, I understand now. So whether it was by consent or by raping me, you were going to fuck me and then kill me, as long as you could survive by having everyone else, including myself, die. I see. Did you calculate how many times you could fuck me, too? Her spine tingled with disgust and fury. A game? She repeated after him and then gave a big smile. But aren't you ashamed of doing this to a girl? Kazushi looked shocked, but then his face became sulky again. His cold eyes shone. You want to die? Go ahead, shoot me. Kazushi hesitated. It was her chance. Takako threw the pebble she'd cautiously taken out of her pocket at his face. As Kazushi covered his face to shield himself, she quickly turned around, dropped the day pack, and dashed back the way she had come, all the while holding on to the ice pick. She thought she could hear him curse behind her. With a good runner's sprint, she'd covered 15 meters when suddenly she felt a blow against her right leg and fell face forward. Her cheek got cut as it scraped against a tree root poking out of the ground. She was more upset over this wound on her face than she was over the sharp pain in her leg. That asshole cut my face. Takako twisted her body around. A silver bolt had pierced her skirt and was planted in the back of her right thigh. Blood dripped down her well-toned legs. Kazushi caught up with her. Seeing her sitting there, he tossed aside the crossbow and took out a pair of nunchaku, short sticks chained together, from under his belt and held them in his right hand. This weapon had been in Mayumi Tendo's day pack, which Kazushi had taken after killing Yoshio Akamatsu. Kazushi's own issued weapon, for some bizarre reason, was an ordinary Shimizu banjo that was completely useless. Of course, this had nothing to do with Takako. Takako glanced at the crossbow on the ground and thought, "You'll regret putting that down." "It's your fault," Kazushi said, panting. "You provoked me." Still seated, Takako glared up at Kazushi. The bastard was still making excuses. She couldn't believe she'd actually been classmates with this idiot for over 2 years. "Wait," Takako said. As Kazushi knit his brows, she got on her knees and twisted her right shoulder around to pull out the bolt in one swift motion. She clenched her teeth. She could feel the flesh tear, followed by a gush of blood. Her skirt was torn again. Now it had two slits. She tossed the bolt aside and stood up, glaring at Kazushi. She was all right. The pain was incredible, but she could take it. She shifted the ice pick over to her right hand. "Don't do it," Kazushi said. "It's no use." She tilted the ice pick sideways, pointing it at his chest. "You said this was a game, right? Fine, I'll be your opponent. I won't lose against an asshole like you. I'll give everything I have to erase your existence. Got it? Do you understand? Or are you too stupid?" But Kazushi still seemed at ease. He was probably thinking how she was a girl, and what was more, injured, so he couldn't lose against her. "I'll say it again," she said. "Don't even think of raping me after beating me to a pulp. Look, little kid, you should worry more about your life than your dick." Kazushi's face contorted, and he raised the nunchucks up to his face. Takako gripped her ice pick. The tension between them mounted. He was probably 15 centimeters taller, 20 kilograms heavier. Takako was probably the number one female athlete in her class, but she had little chance of winning. On top of this, her right leg was pretty badly injured. But she knew she couldn't lose, no matter what. Suddenly, Kazushi made a move. He came forward, swinging the nunchucks down. Takako blocked them with her right arm. One of her two bracelets flew into the air. Made by South American Indians, it was a favorite. Damn. She felt a stinging sensation run up her arm and to the center of her skull. Despite the pain, she thrust the ice pick upward. Kazushi grimaced as he stepped back, dodging it. Once again, they were 2 meters apart. Takako's right arm was numb now, but she was all right. Nothing was broken. He resumed his attack with a backhand swing. Takako ducked into a quick crouch. The nunchuck skimmed her long, streaked hair. Several strands flew into the air. Takako quickly swung her ice pick at his right wrist. She felt it wound him slightly as Kazushi groaned a little and stepped back. They were apart again. Kazushi's wrist, the hand holding the nunchucks, was red, but the cut didn't seem severe. The wound on her right leg was throbbing. She could tell the entire leg below her thigh was covered with blood. She wouldn't last much longer like this. She also noticed a panting sound. It came from her lips. Kazushi once again swung his nunchucks. She could see he was aiming at the left side of her head and at her shoulder. Takako stepped forward. She suddenly recalled something Hiroki, who was a martial arts expert, had taught her. You can defeat your opponent by throwing his timing off. Sometimes, taking a bold step forward can be crucial. The nunchucks hit her shoulder, but just as Hiroki had said, it was only the chain, which hardly hurt. Takako threw herself at Kazushi's chest. His face, eyes wide open in dismay, was right in front of hers. She thrust the ice pick upward. Kazushi shoved Takako away with his empty left hand. Takako lost her balance from her wounded right leg and fell forward. Barely escaping her stab, Kazushi rubbed his unharmed chest with his left hand. "You're really something," he said. Kazushi quickly swung his nunchucks down at Takako. This time he aimed at her face. Takako blocked the blow with her ice pick. With a metallic clang, the ice pick flew into the air and landed in the dirt. The only thing left in her hand now was intense pain. Takako bit her lip. She glared at him as she stepped back. Kazushi grinned and slowly came forward. Undoubtedly, this guy was mentally disturbed. He had no qualms about beating a girl to death. In fact, he was enjoying it. Kazushi swung his nunchucks again. She dodged them by bending back, but the nunchucks followed her instead. Perhaps he'd gotten used to them. This time, Kazushi managed to extend his reach. She felt a sharp thud against the left side of her head. She began to sway. A warm liquid came flowing out of her left nostril. She was on the verge of falling. Kazushi must have looked like he was sure he'd won. Still swaying, Takako's pretty, sharply curved eyes squinted. As she fell, she stretched out her long legs and, with all her might, kicked Kazushi's left knee from the right side. Kazushi let out a painful moan and fell on his left knee. His body floundered and rotated halfway on his knee. Now she saw his back. Had she tried to take the ice pick, Takako might have lost, but that wasn't what she did. She leaped onto Kazushi's back. She clutched his head as if riding on his shoulders. Her weight forced him to fall forward. If a thought occurred to her, it was in choosing which fingers she could use, her index and middle. No, the strongest combination would be her middle finger and thumb, and Takako had always taken good care of her nails. No matter how many times her team coach, Mr. Tada, scolded her about them, she refused to shorten her nails. Hanging on to Kazushi, Takako grabbed hold of his hair and yanked his head back. She knew where to strike. Kazushi must have suddenly realized her intention. She saw him shut his eyes. It was useless, though. Takako's right middle finger and thumb tore through his eyelids and dug into his eye sockets.
Ai!
Kazushi screamed. He fell on his arms, got up on his knees, dropped his nunchucks, and tried to pull her hands off his face. He jerked and flailed frantically, trying to buck her off his back. Takako held on tightly and refused to let go. She pushed her fingers in further. Her thumb and middle finger dug in up to their second joints. As she dug in, she felt something pop and realized it was his eyeballs. She didn't expect eye sockets to be this small. Takako didn't hesitate to bend her sharp fingers inward. Blood and a semi-transparent, slimy liquid came oozing down his cheeks like weird tears.
Arr!
Kazushi cried as he got up and swung his arms around in a panic. He tried to pry her right hand loose from his head with both of his hands and pulled at Takako's hair. Takako jumped free of Kazushi, who ended up with what felt like several strands or even a bundle of hair. Well, she couldn't be worried about that now. She looked for her ice pick and found it. She snatched it up. Kazushi moaned and swung his arms at the, literally, unseen enemy. Then he fell back on his rear end. His eyes were open but completely immersed in a sea of red. He resembled an albino monkey now. Takako dragged her right leg and limped toward him. She lifted her wounded right leg and stomped down on his unprotected crotch. The purple-striped white track sneaker was now red, soaked with Takako's own blood. Underneath its sole, she felt something give way, as if she were crushing a rodent.
Urgh!
Kazushi moaned. He held his crotch and turned on his side, balled up like a fetus. Now Takako stepped on his throat with her left leg, shifting her whole weight onto the ball of her foot. Kazushi reached out, trying to move her foot, hitting it feebly, trying to free himself.
Ha!
Kazushi uttered. It sounded like a tiny draft of air because his throat had been crushed.
Help!
Yeah, right, Takako thought. She could feel her mouth breaking into a grin. Takako realized she wasn't angry anymore. She was actually enjoying this. She was sure about it. So what? She never claimed to be Pope John Paul II or the 14th Dalai Lama. On her knees now, she thrust the ice pick into his mouth. She saw several cavity fillings. His arms, which were struggling to pull at her leg, suddenly froze. Takako pushed further. It sunk into his throat without much resistance. Kazushi's entire body, from his chest down to his toes, went into convulsions. Then it stopped. The albino eyes remained open, surrounded by a spider's web pattern of gooey blood, thick like dripping paint. She felt a sudden surge of pain in her right leg and fell on her back by his head. She was panting now the way she did after running 200-meter dashes for physical tests. She'd won. But she also felt empty. The actual fight might have lasted less than 30 seconds. She wouldn't have survived a longer fight. In any case, she won. That was what mattered.
Takako held her blood-soaked right leg as she looked down at Kazushi's corpse, which resembled a traveling magician attempting to spit out an ice pick from his throat. "Now, ladies and gentlemen, I shall spit out what I just swallowed."
"Takako." The voice came from behind her. Still seated, Takako turned around. She reached out and pulled out the ice pick from Kazushi's mouth. Kazushi's head rose a little and then fell to the ground. Mitsuko Saumo, female student number 11, was looking down at Takako. Takako quickly looked over at Mitsuko's right hand. Her small hand was holding a large automatic pistol. She had no idea what her intentions were. But, if like Kazushi Niida, she intended to play the game, this after all was Mitsuko Saumo, Takako had no chance of winning. Mitsuko had a gun. She had to escape. She had to. Takako pulled painfully at her right leg and tried to get up. "Are you all right?" Mitsuko asked. Her voice sounded terribly kind. She didn't point the gun at her. But Takako had to be cautious. She moved back and finally managed to get up by holding on to a tree nearby. Her right leg felt incredibly heavy. She answered, "Well, I suppose." Mitsuko looked over Kazushi's corpse. Then she looked at the ice pick in Takako's hands. "You killed him with that? I have to say I'm impressed," speaking as one girl to another. She really sounded like she was impressed. It almost sounded cheerful. Her angelic face was beaming. "I guess," Takako responded. She felt as if her body were off balance. Perhaps it was from the heavy loss of blood from her right leg. "Say," Mitsuko said, "you never went out of your way to impress me." Still unable to tell what Mitsuko's intentions were, Takako stared at her. The two most beautiful girls in Shiro Iwa Junior High were staring at each other. "Nice jewelry and a boy's corpse. Oh, you're so pretty." Mitsuko was absolutely right. Takako couldn't stand sucking up to anyone, so she was never intimidated like the other girls when Mitsuko talked to her. She was too proud. And besides, she wasn't scared of Mitsuko. Then she remembered something an older student she had a crush on a while ago. Actually, it ended only a couple months ago, used to say. Whereas her feelings for Hiroki Sugimura were vague, she definitely had a crush on this guy. After getting involved in one of his friend's fights, he showed up all beaten up at the team room before one of their meets and said in his unique voice, "There's nothing to be afraid of. Nothing to fear. Be strong and beautiful." Takako had her eye on this guy ever since she entered junior high, and he'd had a profound effect on her personality. But he also had a girlfriend. Someone very elegant, yes. Someone like Sakura Ogawa. Someone calm as a serene lake hidden deep inside a forest. Well, that was all in the past. But, Takako thought, the fact that she suddenly recalled his words now, though they hadn't occurred to her even when she was fighting Kazushi Niida just moments ago, did that mean that she was, in fact, afraid of Mitsuko? "I was always a little envious," Mitsuko continued. "You were so pretty, and you were a better girl than me." Takako listened quietly. She immediately realized there was something wrong. Why was Mitsuko referring to her in the past tense? But Mitsuko's eyes twinkled playfully. Now she was back to the present tense. "I really like girls like you. Maybe I'm a bit of a dyke, so it's..." Takako's eyes opened wide. She turned around and began running. Her right leg dragged a little, but it was still a respectable sprint for the track star. "So it's..." Mitsuko lifted the .45. She pulled the trigger three times in a row. Takako had managed to run down the hill and into the woods, covering a quick 20 meters when three holes appeared in the back of her uniform. She fell forward as if diving into a head-first slide. Face down, she slid across the ground, and her legs flashed white and red as they flew into the air, her skirt fluttering against them. She was lying on the ground. Mitsuko put down the gun and said, "Too bad." 24 students remaining.
Chapter 38. Noriko's breathing grew heavier. Shogo's medicine didn't seem to be having much effect. It was close to 2 p.m. All of a sudden, Noriko's cheeks appeared sunk in. Shuya used up a bottle of water to moisten Noriko's handkerchief. He wiped her sweaty face with the cloth and then placed it on her forehead. Noriko kept her eyes closed, but nodded as if to thank him. Shuya looked back at Shogo. Shogo remained in the same position, leaning against a tree all this time, smoking with his legs crossed. His right hand gently touched the grip of the Remington shotgun resting in his lap. Shogo.
What?
Let's go. Shogo raised his brows.
Where?
Shuya's lips tightened. I can't stand it anymore. He pointed to Noriko. She's getting worse every second. Shogo glanced at Noriko, who was lying down with her eyes closed. If it's from septicemia, warming her up and letting her rest won't cure her. Shuya did his best to restrain his impatience. According to the map, there's a medical clinic on the island. We might be able to find some better medicine for her there, right? It's way north of the residential area, and it's not in any of the forbidden zones.
Oh, yeah.
Shogo exhaled smoke from the corner of his mouth.
That's true.
Let's go there. Shogo tilted his head. He took another drag and then rubbed out the cigarette. That facility is at least 1.5 kilometers away. It's too dangerous to go there now. We have to wait until dark. Shuya clenched his teeth. We can't wait until dark. What if that area becomes a forbidden zone? Shogo didn't reply. Hey, Shuya said. He wasn't sure whether it was from impatience or the mere thought of having to risk falling out with Shogo, but he was beginning to stammer a little. He had to say it, though. I won't say you're trying to get us killed, but why are you so afraid of taking any risks? Your life that precious? Shuya looked him in the eye. Shogo didn't change his calm expression. Shuya. Shuya heard Noriko's voice behind him and turned around. Noriko had her head turned toward him. The handkerchief on her forehead was lying on the ground. Stop it. We won't make it without Shogo, she managed to say in between heavy breaths. Noriko. Shuya shook his head. Don't you see how weak you're getting? You can't die before we make it out of here. Shuya turned to Shogo again. If you say you're not coming, I'll take Noriko with me on my own. You can forget about our deal. You're on your own. That was his parting remark as he got ready to get their bags. Hold on, Shogo said. He slowly got up, approached Noriko, and checked the pulse of her right wrist. It was what he did every 20 minutes. He rubbed his increasingly stubbly chin again and looked at them. You won't know what medicine to use. He tilted his head slightly, looked at Shuya, and said, All right, I'm coming with you. 24 students remaining. Chapter 39. Although over half an hour had passed since she'd been shot in the back 3 times, and though she'd lost a large quantity of blood from the bolt wound in her leg, Takako Chiguza was still alive. Mitsuko Sauma had disappeared, but Takako couldn't care less about that. She was half dozing, half dreaming. Her family, her father, mother, and younger sister, were all waving at Takako from the front gate of their house. She could tell her sister, Ayako, who was 2 years younger, was crying. She was saying, Goodbye, Takako. Goodbye. Her handsome father, from whom Takako had inherited most of her features, and her mother, who shared her looks more with Ayako, were both silent, looking very sad. Their pet dog, Hanako, drooped her head and wagged her tail. Takako had taken care of Hanako, a smart female dog, ever since she was a puppy. Oh, shit, Takako thought in her dream. How awful. I've only lived 15 years. Hey, Ayako, look after Mom and Dad, okay? You're so spoiled. So learn from your older sister a little, huh? Then she saw Kahoru Kitazawa, her one really close friend,
the petite girl she'd been buddies with for 7 years now.
Time to say goodbye to you too, Kahoru. You were the one who said that nothing, not even hell, could scare you as long as you gave it your best shot. I'm not afraid, but it's still kinda hard, dying alone like this.
Then Kahoru seemed to be shouting, but you couldn't hear her well. It sounded like,
what about him? Him?
Then the scene changed to her track team locker room. She knew it was the summer of her second year because this room had been torn down last fall, replaced by a new clubhouse.
Hey, this is no dream. This actually happened. This...
An older teammate. His buzz-cut hair stood up in front, and he wore a white t-shirt with the words, "Fuck off," on it, and green track shorts with black lines. Playful but gentle-looking eyes. He was the guy she had a crush on. He was good at running hurdles. Now he was concentrating on taping up his knee that he'd injured a while ago. There was no one else besides them.
Takako said, "You have a beautiful girlfriend. You two make a great couple."
Ah, well, when it comes to him, I turn into an average girl. How lame.
Yeah?
He lifted his face and smiled.
You're prettier than she is.
Takako smiled but felt a little odd. She was happy to hear him praise her looks for the first time, but the fact he could tell another girl she was prettier also indicated how strong his relationship with his girlfriend was.
"Don't you have a boyfriend, Takako?" he asked, smiling.
The scene changed again. She was at the park, but everything appeared very low.
"Oh, this must be from my childhood. I must have been in the second or third grade."
Hiroki Sugimura was crying in front of her. He wasn't tall, the way he was now. In fact, back then, Takako was taller. A bully had taken away his brand new comic book.
"Come on, boys don't cry. Don't be such a wuss. Be strong. Come on. Our dog just had puppies. You want to see them?"
"Okay." Hiroki wiped his tears and tagged along. Come to think of it, Hiroki started martial arts the year after that. He also went through a growth spurt around then and eventually ended up taller than she. Up until the end of elementary school, they often visited each other. Once, when she seemed preoccupied, Hiroki asked her,
"What's wrong, Takako?
Something wrong?" Takako thought about it and then said what was on her mind. "Hey, Hiroki, what would you do if someone said they liked you?"
"I don't know, since it's never happened to me."
"Don't you have a crush on someone?"
"Nope, not at this moment," he said.
Takako then thought, "So I'm not even in the running? Whatever."
"Oh, really?
Well, you should find someone you can confess to."
"I'm too chicken."
"I don't think so."
The scene changed. Junior high school again. They became classmates in their second year. They were talking on the first day of class. At some point, Hiroki said, "So I heard there's this supposedly hot guy on the track team." Although Hiroki didn't directly say it, he was implying she had a crush on the track star.
"Who told you?"
"Just heard."
"So how's it going?"
"No hope," she said.
"He has a girlfriend."
"What about you?
You still don't have a girlfriend?"
"Leave me alone."
"We were always on the verge of being close. We both had a thing for each other, but... or am I just imagining things? At least, I liked you. I mean, it was different from how I felt about my track teammate. You know what I mean?"
Hiroki's face appeared. He was crying.
"Takako, don't die."
"Come on, guy, be a man. Boys don't cry. You might be bigger now, but you haven't made much progress."
Was it by the grace of God? Takako came to her senses once more. She opened her eyes. Hiroki Sugimura was looking down at her in the soft afternoon light. Beyond Hiroki, she saw the treetops. And in between them, fragments of the blue sky formed complex patterns like those in a Rorschach test. The first thing she realized was that Hiroki wasn't crying. Then she started wondering, "How did you..." As she tried to form words with her mouth, she felt as if she were forcing open a rusty door. She realized she didn't have too long to live.
Get here. All Hiroki said was, I managed.
He knelt down beside her and gently lifted up her head. She'd fallen face forward, but now for some reason she was facing up. The palm of her left hand. Her left hand. No, the entire left side of her body was numb now, so she couldn't feel anything. It might have been from Kazushi Niida's blow to the side of her head. Felt the sensation of weeds underneath. Had he carried her here? Hiroki then asked quietly, Who got you?
It was important information.
Mitsuko, Takako answered. She didn't give a damn about Kazushi Niida anymore.
Be careful.
Hiroki nodded. Then he said, I'm sorry. Takako didn't understand. She stared at Hiroki. I was hiding outside the school, waiting for you, Hiroki said, and then tightened his lips as if holding something back. But then Yoshio came back. I got distracted for a split second. Then, you know how you ran at full speed? I lost you. I ran in your direction, calling after you, but you were too far off by then.
Oh no, Takako thought.
So it was true. After she ran away from the school into the woods, she thought she heard a distant voice. But she was so frantic she thought it was just her imagination. And if it wasn't, then it meant there was someone. So she continued running at full speed.
Oh.
Hiroki had waited for her. Just as she'd suspected. He'd been waiting for her, risking his life. And when he said, I managed, he probably meant that he'd been looking for her all this time. The thought made her want to cry. Instead, she did her best to form a smile on her face.
Really?
Thanks. Takako knew that she couldn't talk much anymore. She tried to come up with the best thing to say, but then an odd question occurred to her and she blurted it out. Do you have a crush on someone? Hiroki's brows moved, and then he gently said, I do. Don't say it's me. Still looking sad, Hiroki faintly smiled. No, it's not. Well then. Takako took a deep breath. She felt as if poison were spreading through her body, which strangely felt both chilly and at the same time incredibly hot. Could you just hold me tight? It'll be over soon. Hiroki tightened his lips and raised her up, hugging her tightly to his body with both his arms. Her head was on the verge of falling back, but Hiroki held it up. She felt like she could say one more thing. You have to survive, Hiroki. Dear God, can I have one more word? Takako looked into Hiroki's eyes and grinned. You've become quite a stud. And you're the most styling girl in the world. Takako smiled faintly. She wanted to thank him, but she was out of breath. She just stared at Hiroki's eyes. She was grateful. At least she wasn't going to die alone. The last person to stay with her ended up being Hiroki, and she was grateful. She really was.
Kahoru, thanks. I heard you.
Takako Chikuza remained in this position as she died approximately 2 minutes later. Her eyes remained open. Hiroki Sugimura held her limp, lifeless body, and wept. 23 students remaining. Chapter 40. Get down, Shogo said. He carefully surveyed the area while holding on to his shotgun. Carrying Noriko on his back, Shuya obeyed. The area was shaded by a large elm tree. They must have covered 2/3 of the distance to the medical facility by now. They should be in the vicinity of Sector F6 or F7. If they were headed in the right direction, Shogo was leading them, so they couldn't be far off. The school building should soon appear below them to their right. Moving along the shore, they first passed through C4. Then they moved east along the foot of the northern mountain. Moving in broad daylight did turn out to be difficult. They would move a little and then stop to quiet down their breathing, and when they had to get through thick vegetation, Shogo would throw several pebbles ahead to make sure no one was there. It had already taken them half an hour just to get this far. Noriko's breath was still labored. Shuya tilted his head back the way mothers do with their infants and told her, "We're almost there, Noriko."
"Uh-huh,"
she answered. "All right, let's go," Shogo said. "We're going for that tree over there."
"Got it."
Shuya got up and proceeded across the soft, grassy soil that must have been a farm field. Shogo was right next to them, holding their belongings with his left hand and his shotgun in his right, indicating directions with the motion of his head. The muzzle of the shotgun would point in the same direction as his head. They reached a thin tree and stopped. Shuya took a deep breath. "Are you all right, Shuya?" Shuya gave him a smile. "Noriko's light. We can take a break."
"No,"
Shuya shook his head. "I want to get there as soon as possible." "All right," Shogo said. But Shuya felt uncertain. Maybe he was being an idiot. He was always jumping to wrong conclusions, failing to check the important details.
"Shogo?"
"What?" "Does that mark on a map really indicate a clinic?" Shogo snickered. "I believe you were the one who claimed it did."
"No, that was..."
Shuya was embarrassed, but Shogo immediately said, "Don't worry, it is a clinic. I checked it."
"Really?"
"Yeah. I walked around the island last night until I met you guys. I should have had the foresight to take some more medicine. I didn't think I'd need it." Shuya let out a sigh of relief. Then he reproached himself. He had to get his act together. Otherwise, he'd end up not only getting himself killed, but Noriko as well. Even as they talked, Shogo was searching for their next spot.
"All right." Then they heard the gunfire.
Shogo froze. He nervously crouched down and surveyed the area. So had Shuya been too optimistic in hoping that they could reach the medical facility without any obstacles? But there was no one in sight. Shuya looked over at Shogo, who stretched out his left arm as if to shield them, and looked ahead toward their left, where they were headed. There was a gentle slope leading up to rows of tall pine trees which cut off their view, approximately 10 meters away. Did he mean they were going through there? Shuya finally let out the breath he'd been holding.
"It's all right," Shogo said in a hushed voice. "We're not the targets."
Shuya decided against pulling out his gun and, still carrying Noriko, said,
"It's close."
Shogo nodded silently. Then the gunfire continued. 2, then 3 shots. The third one somehow seemed louder than the first 2 shots. Then another shot. It was a smaller sound.
"A gunfight," Shogo mumbled. "They're pretty pumped up."
Now that he knew they were safe, Shuya felt relieved, but he kept on biting his lip. Whoever they were, his classmates were trying to kill each other again. In fact, it was happening right near him, and he was just trying to stay quiet, waiting for it to end. That was just... The image of the man in black crossed his mind. "Now then, you're next. And you. Fortunately, Mr. Nanahara, your time still hasn't come." His back to Shuya, Shogo said, as if he could read Shuya's thoughts. Hadn't he said something silly about reading his mind on a clear day?
"I hope you're not thinking of stopping them, Shuya."
Shuya held his breath and then mumbled,
"No."
His priority was to take Noriko to the medical facility. If they got mixed up with someone else's fight, they'd end up risking their own lives. Then Noriko suddenly said from behind, "Shuya." Her fever was so high he could even feel it through his back. She was practically whispering. Shuya turned his head around. He saw Noriko's eyes squinting right behind his shoulder.
"Let me stand," she finally said. "We have to see, make sure, whoever it is."
Her words were cut off by her heavy breathing, but he knew what she was getting at. What if someone who didn't want to participate, in other words, someone innocent, was about to get killed right now? In fact, that could be the case with both of the parties exchanging bullets. The area they were in was a direct southward descent from the northern peak where Yukiko Katano and Yumiko Kosaka were killed. but they weren't hearing a machine gun now. Therefore, neither of the